Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and reading with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wiegman.
Today's Valentine's show will focus on love. Later in the hour, humorist and former North State Voices columnist Eric Miller will have a Valentine's Day story for us. My first guest is a doctor who discovered the healing power of love. Dr. Kelly Otani is a board-certified physician who specializes in physical medicine and rehabilitation. He graduated from the University of California, Davis, and did his residency at the University of Washington. He was the medical director at Chico Community Hospital and Enloe Medical Center in Chico for 20 years before looking to combine what he had learned in his medical training with his decade-long research into psychological and spiritual healing. He is still on the staff at Enloe and is also director of pain management at Feather River Health Clinic. Dr. Kelly Otani, welcome.
Thank you, Nancy.
You know, some years ago, I'm sure you remember, it was over 10 years ago, but I used to produce a spot called Health Desk, and I would invite doctors and to come in and talk about their specialty. And you were one of my guests on that show.
Yes.
And I don't know that I've seen you since then. This was over 10 years ago. And when I saw you now, I think, gosh, he looks 10 years younger instead of 10 years older.
Well, thank you. It's basically, I think, once a person's living their true path, finding what their true purpose in life, their physiology changes. And that's probably what happened. And you look younger too, by the way.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you for that. So you set out on this journey.
Yes.
What was the motivation? What was that spark, that impetus that said, I've got to change?
Basically, it happened around 2000, and I had been the medical director and was taking care of patients in the hospital. And I was getting really burned out because basically I didn't feel like I was impacting their lives the way I was meant to or I should. Basically, I was prescribing a lot of medication. I was ordering therapy. And once the medication stopped or the therapy stopped, they'd go back to where they were at before. I remember a book that I read when I was doing my internship. It was called House of God, and it was the laments of a medical intern. And he talked about working in the emergency room, and patients would come in. The medical staff would call them GOMERS, which is an acronym for Get Out of My Emergency Room. And basically, for example, it would be somebody who had lung disease, and they'd stay at home smoking. And so pretty soon they'd decompensate. They'd get ill. They'd come to the emergency room. They couldn't take care of it in the emergency room, so they'd have to admit the patient for a few days. And as the patient was being wheeled out by the nurse in a wheelchair, the medical staff would look, and he'd pull out a pack of cigarettes and start smoking again. So basically,
that must have been so discouraging.
Very discouraging. We see that over and over and over again. Health is based on three parts, right? It's genetic, it's environmental, the food we drink, or food we eat, the water we drink, the air we breathe, the people we associate with, and our behavior. And so basically we have
And you know what? That third one often doesn't get mentioned. When
yes.
people are looking, they look at genetics, they look at what they inherit, and they look at their environment.
Yes.
But not always that third one, behavior, we don't seem to accept responsibility for that.
Right. I've talked to a number of emergency room personnel and ambulance drivers, and they would say, basically, if people behave differently, I'd be out of business. There would be no work. So that plays a large role in people's health.
My guest is Dr. Kelly Otani, and he practiced conventional medicine.
Yes.
For, what, two decades, more than that. And you came to a point where you said, I'm not really healing people.
That's correct. And so basically, Albert Einstein said, whenever you reach a conflict or problem with a certain level of thinking, you can't solve the problem with the same level of thinking. You have to evolve your thinking to gain a different perspective to find the actual solution to the problem. So I thought we were all mind, body, and spirit. We're not just physical beings. And so I began my quest. I started studying with different world-renowned psychologists, psychiatrists. I grew up Christian. I started studying Buddhism, Taoism. I studied with Native American healers. I studied with Inuit Grey Wolf. I studied with Lakota Sioux. I studied with a Navajo. I studied with a Kahuna from Hawaii. And an interesting thing happened. I did it to help find other ways for patients to heal. And it ended up changing me. And I couldn't practice medicine anymore.
Well, you mentioned that you grew up Christian.
Yes.
Do you get people saying, oh, Kelly, you got too much emphasis. You use the word God in your book. By the way, I didn't get the title of your book. It's Paradox of Conscious Healing. And you use the word God in your book. Do people bristle at that? Oh, Kelly, don't talk about God. You're a scientist. You're a physician, for Pete's sake.
Right. It's interesting. I went to a conference of integrative medicine put on by the Cleveland Clinic. And some of the presenters there were world-renowned researchers from academic institutions. And I talked to them after they talked about what they were doing and the great outcomes they were having. And I went up to a couple of them afterwards and I said, you guys step up to spirituality, but you don't cross that line. And they said, yeah, we're afraid to, because our colleagues will consider us woo-woo, or the mention of God is not part of it. And God is, for me, is not necessarily an anthropomorphic person. It's basically what I believe is the characteristics. So I look at love. I look at forgiveness. I look at gratitude. I look at purpose. I look at humor. All the things that aid in healing.
Because you earlier mentioned somebody who wrote a book, and God was in the title of that book. Would you say, because you said you grew up Christian, were you very religious before you took this journey, would you say?
You know, I did a personality test when I was like in just starting high school, and it said I was supposed to be either a social worker or a minister. So maybe I had those characteristics right from the very beginning, but I ended up going into medicine. So
you are practicing medicine, conventional medicine, and you feel like you're maybe spinning your wheels, that you're not really healing people.
That's correct.
And so you started doing research. And the result of this research, you spent 10 years, I understand, researching, and the result was this book, Paradox of Healing. And you didn't limit yourself to any one spiritual tradition.
That's correct.
You say you investigated various ones. Now, one you said that Buddhist belief, all fear is illusion. This Buddhist belief that all fear is illusion. But fear is behind a lot of the reasons we do what we do. And you bring that up often. And yet you quote this, you mentioned that this Buddhist belief that all fear is illusion. How do you explain that?
That's what one of my teachers had said, who studied Zen Buddhism. And basically, we get held back from being who we are out of fear of being judged, out of fear of being wrong. And part of it, honestly, Nancy, is just honoring who we are and what we represent. It's basically, for me, one of my biggest challenges growing up was feeling deserved or feeling worthy, or I think a lot of people have that.
In fact, you say in your book, you mention your fear of not living up to your potential.
Yes.
Do you think that was instilled in you by your parents?
Oh, absolutely. It was. You get that thing where you're never good enough, and so you have to always work at it. I think a lot of people have that.
Well, and we might mention, too, that your background, your ancestry, is from a very high-achieving culture.
That's correct. And so,
well, you might tell people what your ancestry is.
I'm a full-blooded Japanese American. Both my parents are Japanese ancestry. And yes, it's about who you are. The value of who you are is what you accomplish in life. And as I've evolved, it's more about what you become.
My guest is Dr. Kelly Otani, and he has written a book, Paradox of Conscious Healing. And this book is a result of years of research on your part.
That's correct.
And you quote some studies that you have looked into, and you have a lot of interesting quotes. What's one of your favorite quotes that you use in your book? You probably have a lot of them.
A lot of them. One of them was by, I think it was by Carrie Fisher. She said, holding on to resentment is like drinking poison, expecting the other person to die. Or else another quote is by Gandhi. He says, be the change you want to see in the world. And I was tired of complaining of things that I was seeing in the world. And I wanted to be part of the solution and looking for solutions for things that I was seeing in the world.
Mm-hmm. And when you started this this search, where did you begin? How did you know even how to begin to say, okay, my profession, my career isn't what I would hope for. I'm not really healing people. So what was that first step that you took?
I read a book called, by the Dalai Lama, called The Art of Happiness. And I just, something hit me as far as some truth to that. And I just had a realization I wasn't happy. And part of it was an inner exploration of why I wasn't happy. What were the untruths I was not living, or I was living at that time, and trying to undo that, understand it.
I have that very book on my shelf, too. I'm such a fan of the Dalai Lama.
Absolutely.
And then there was somebody else who said, we human beings are looking for happiness.
That's correct. That was William Glasser.
And you studied with him, and I just was fascinated by the circumstances under which you got to know this famous psychiatrist, although he wasn't famous enough for you to have heard of him.
Right. In medical school, you don't really learn that stuff. And basically, I happened to, at that time, I went through a divorce, and I just broke up with my girlfriend. I was having problems with my teenage son.
Imagine that, a teenager.
Exactly. I mean, nobody has that.
No.
So I just said, I'd been working hard, and I said, I just have to get out of town. So I booked a room in San Francisco. I was just going to go down there for the weekend. So I think it was about, I got to the hotel about 11 o'clock at night after doing paperwork all evening, and the next day, I went out to the lobby. They had a restaurant in the lobby, and there was a big long line in the restaurant to be seated. And there was this older woman at that time who was standing in front of me, who's got to talking. And we get to the front of the line, and she said, why don't you join my husband and I for lunch? And I said, no, that's okay. I don't want to impose. I'll just grab the next table. But she insisted on me joining them. So I reluctantly, I said, okay, I'll join you. So I went to the table and sat down. This older gentleman came shuffling up, and she says, I'd like for you to meet my husband, William Glasser. I don't know who William Glasser is.
Of course, and you didn't say that to her.
No, I didn't say that to her, but basically he was one of the world's greatest living psychiatrists at that time. He's since passed away. He had 11 institutes all over the world, from everywhere from Ireland to South America to Australia, New Zealand, Japan, 11 institutes all over the world. So he invited me to attend his lecture. He was talking about warning psychiatry can be dangerous to your mental health. He was giving a lecture at a conference in the hotel.
So repeat that title now, just in case people didn't catch it.
He said, the title of the book was Warning, Psychiatry Can Be Dangerous to Your Mental Health. And basically his feeling was that psychiatry was moving away from counseling and moving into just prescribing drugs. And I tell you,
to the delight
of
the pharmaceutical companies.
Yes. So I ended up, ended up inviting me, I don't know why, but he ended up inviting me to study with him down in Southern California, in Brentwood, California, at his home. So I'd fly down for a weekend every other month for a year and a half and study directly with him. And it was a wonderful experience.
My guest is Dr. Kelly Otani, and he is telling us how he explored true healing to complement your training as a physician. It wasn't that you tossed all that you learned out the window, but you wanted to looked for other answers.
That's correct. I'm not denigrating traditional Western medicine. I think there's a lot of great technology, a lot of great techniques and new medications that are very beneficial, but basically what's been shown through research is a person who has a spiritual practice or has a positive attitude has twice the recovery rate in cancer or has twice the recovery rate after heart surgery than a person who doesn't. So it's very powerful.
Yeah, and you, when you were studying, well, William Glasser, the doctor, yes. Glasser, decried the quick fix, that's what you, the patient comes into your office, you prescribe, you write out the prescription, and they're fixed.
That's
although
correct.
They really weren't.
Although they really weren't. I mean, basically, a person can come in with high blood pressure or with some sort of pain, and you're given medication. Doesn't necessarily mean, if you look deeper, maybe they lost their job. Maybe they're going through a divorce. Maybe there's something else going on in their lives that is manifesting itself in a physical way.
And any human being, I mean, that would be a cause for depression.
Yes.
That would be, I think, normal, not abnormal. But
that's
that would
correct.
Be normal
right.
to be depressed. You lose a loved one. To take a pill, that's what we do because we don't want to go through that suffering. Take a pill. So it's not, you know, we maybe are blaming doctors, but the patients say, doctor, just give me something to take away the pain.
That's right. And basically, there's a line from the old Spider-Man. It said, with great power comes great responsibility. But the opposite, that's a paradox. The opposite's also true, that with great responsibility comes great power. The more patients take responsibility for their own care, for their own health, it's empowering.
The title of Dr. Otani's book is Paradox of Conscious Healing. And I do want to ask you about the paradox, but I found an interesting study that this Harvard professor said, I'm going to take a look at the lifestyle of maids who work in hotels.
Yes.
And one of her students helped her with this study, and she was shocked. What shocked this professor?
Well, basically, she was at a hotel and she'd watch these maids do this heavy manual labor, and yet they were overweight. And so she wanted to do a research study to determine why that was. So it was at several different hotels. She broke the sample group into two samples, and one, she didn't do anything with those. The second one, she informed them, she asked them if they exercise, and a lot of them said no. Then she informed them that, you know, by the type of work that you do, you're meeting all the criterion for the Surgeon General's criterion for exercise. And an interesting thing happened. A lot of them, their weight went down. Their blood pressure went down. They started losing weight. Just that simple concept of, yeah, they were exercising. Yeah, they were doing what they're supposed to do, and their physiology changed. It was remarkable.
Yeah, because you'd think they would realize, yeah, I'm doing physical work all day long. And yet, when the professor said, ask them about exercise, oh, no, we don't exercise.
That's right.
When she saw otherwise, she saw them hoisting heavy equipment and moving it around and doing physical, they were quite active physically, but yet, no, we don't exercise.
That's correct. And the control group, the ones, they stayed the same. There was no physiologic change that happened to them.
So these people who want to lose weight, maybe they should take a look at that study. Ah, maybe I should change the way I'm thinking about my situation.
That's right.
Well, in your book, you mention, you say our bodies are like cars. And I remember there was a period of time when I used to dream fairly frequently that I was driving my mother's car. My mother's car was driving around, and in most of the dreams, I was trying to go forward instead I was going backwards, and I couldn't get it out of reverse. I was going backwards instead of forwards, or I would be trying to get up a really, really steep hill, and that hill was so steep that I was trying to climb. And then it dawned on me, oh, I got my body from my mother. So in my dream, I was driving my mother's car.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, oh, okay, this car is my body.
Right.
And you have a little bit different, but you said our bodies are you see them metaphorically as cars. And
yes.
What did you mean by that?
Well, basically, it represents our whole being. And this is William Glasser's car.
In fact, in your book, you have a diagram
yes.
of this car
yes.
that you learned from him.
Right. And it has, it's being driven by our behavior. And the front wheels are, represent how we think and how we act. And the rear wheels represent how we feel and our physiology. Now, the back wheels are fixed. You can't do anything with those. But the front wheels go with what the steering wheel does. And we are in the driver's seat. We are controlling that car. So we can't change how we feel about things, like if we're having pain. We can't change our physiology if we have disease or illness. But we can change how we think and what we do about it. So we can say, I tell my patients, well, by thinking the same way, in acting the same way, you see yourself 5 years down the road, where are you going to be? Would you like to change and get off that road and go onto a different road? And a lot of times, too, people are always in the rear, looking in the rearview mirror. They're looking at the past. They're looking at the guilt, the shame, the anger that they have, instead of looking to where they're going. And part of the process is not looking in the back rearview mirror anymore and looking to the road ahead.
Kelly, you say in your book that you've always been drawn to Native American culture. And here was a patient who came to see you who was Native American.
Yes.
And how did you deal with her?
I didn't know what to do. But basically, for a lot of my patients, I'm always looking for ways of helping patients. And it led to another journey of dealing with different healers like Lakota Sioux, and brought me to Grey Wolf, who is an Inuit healer. And he ended up, I arranged a phone conversation with...
Well, you know what? Before you say how you met him, his past was so fascinating, I thought. I mean, here's a guy, Native American, who became a Catholic deacon when he was 16 years old.
That's correct.
And he performed exorcisms?
Yes, with Father, he called him Father John. They travel all over the world performing exorcism. And Grey Wolf was able to do traveling because he'd get free passage through the airlines. His father, I don't know if you've ever seen the Alaskan Airline jet of the Eskimo on the tail of the jet. That's his father.
Yeah, so Grey Wolf's father... is the guy you see on the Alaskan Airlines jets.
That's correct. That's correct. So Grey Wolf was able to fly to so many different locations, studying from different indigenous healers, whether it be Australia, whether it be in Central America, or South America, Africa, North America, everywhere. It helped him gain better understanding of other ways to heal. And
so what did you learn from Grey Wolf? Because you studied with him and his partner,
this woman
for almost 2 years.
That's correct.
And at what point did she say, okay, I'm pushing you out of the nest, so to speak?
Well, towards the end of my journey, we had a lot of interesting adventures, whether it be he arranged a meeting in Massachusetts with NASA because he was a visionary, able to see things in the universe. And the astrophysicist says he got over 200 emails a day, but he saw Grey Wolf and what he was saying. And he says, I have to meet this guy. So I didn't know anything about it. So Grey Wolf calls me and says, Kelly, what are you doing in October, such and such? And I said, I'm not doing anything. And he says, well, I want you to come with me to Massachusetts. I'm meeting NASA. And so it was things like that all the time. I mean, just...
opportunities you would never dream of.
Absolutely.
In a million years.
Absolutely. It's been a wonderful journey.
So you studied with Grey Wolf and his partner, and I mentioned that it came to that point where she says, okay, Kelly, take this knowledge and become it.
Yes. I mean, there's a difference between knowing it and becoming it. Knowing about it, I should say. And you only know things by becoming things. And so it's been part of my journey at this point.
Dr. Kelly Otani's book is Paradox of Conscious Healing. And I do want to ask you what you mean by that, why you call it Paradox of Conscious Healing. But we do need to take a break. So after we come back, I want to ask you about what this paradox is that you refer to in your title. And also you include in your book some exercises. So I want to ask you about those when we come back from the break. You are listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My guest is Dr. Kelly Otani, who is a board-certified physician specializing in physical medicine and rehabilitation. And he was a medical director at Chico Community Hospital and Enloe Medical Center in Chico for 20 years before he began looking to combine what he had learned in his medical training with his search into psychological and spiritual healing. And I do want to give you a chance to talk about the paradox, but this spiritual emphasis, does it bother some of your colleagues, or are you colleagues, people who understand the importance of
spiritual part? Are really accepting of it who are spiritual. Other people kind of poo-poo it, kind of view me as a witch doctor or voodoo or something like that. The word paradox has always intrigued me in that that which you think is real is not real, or that which is you think is not real is real. Basically, if you look at Eastern and Western religions deal with God as transcendent, whereas Eastern religions deal with God as immanent inside of you. And, you know, it's the same thing. So it's the paradox of the situation.
Well, it's not until later in your book that you begin to explain what you mean by paradox. And, for example, you referred to the Dalai Lama's book, The Art of Happiness, and he said, what we all seek is happiness. And then you say, don't take a pill. Now, I would think there is a role for pills, but you say, further down, don't take a pill when you're feeling pain. And why not? Why not take a pill when you're feeling pain? Why not?
I think basically you're giving power to the pill. And basically it's an opportunity to try to understand sometimes the underlying meaning behind a condition that we have. Maybe we get sick with a flu or a cold because we're run down, maybe because we're working too hard. Or maybe we have some other medical condition that maybe it's because we're not pursuing the right path in our lives. So part of it is trying to discern where certain illnesses or diseases are coming from without relying. I'm not saying don't take a pill in that, yeah. Basically, if a person has depression, they can't work on other aspects of their lives until they get that depression under control or even pain. They can't move forward as far as self-actualization, as far as exploring different parts of themselves until that pain does not overwhelm them.
Well, in fairness, I want to go back and read the sentence as you wrote it because I found something else interesting in this sentence. And you say, if you eat when feeling the sensation of hunger, or take a pill when feeling pain, you positively reinforce and strengthen the sensation. And when I read, if you eat when feeling the sensation of hunger, I thought, well, my goodness, we need to eat when we're hungry. But then I noticed, oh, the word hunger is quotation marks. So when you say, if you eat when feeling the sensation of hunger in quotation marks, I'm assuming you don't mean true hunger.
No, I think there's certain thought patterns that get activated with certain body sensations, and we tend to develop fear along with those thought patterns, whether it be, I'm going to starve, I'm going to feel worse, I'm going to, and we start adding those things, and what we think tends to manifest. If a person thinks that their condition is going to lead to more disability, that's exactly what happens.
And the rest of this sentence was, if you do these things, if you eat when feeling sensation hunger or take a pill when feeling, quote, pain, and their pain is in quotation marks too, you positively reinforce and strengthen the sensation. To extinguish the feeling, surrender to the feeling with neutrality, acceptance, and non-action. To more rapidly extinguish it, we can tell ourselves we want more of the sensation in paradox. Resisting something makes it stronger and brings it closer. Desiring something moves it further from you. Oh my gosh, that's just opposite of what we would think would be our reaction.
That's correct. If I told you, Nancy, for the next 15 seconds, don't think of the Statue of Liberty. Whatever you do, don't think of the Statue of Liberty. What are you going to think of?
The Statue of Liberty,
right? Yeah. It's interesting. Growing up, I'd really like a girl, and the more I tried to get her to like me, the more she would move away until I stopped pursuing her. All of a sudden, she was, what's Kelly doing? So she'd come back. And so, yes, that which you resist persists.
So I'm going to read that sentence again. It starts, in paradox, resisting something makes it stronger and brings it closer. So resisting whatever it is you don't want and you resist makes it stronger and brings it closer. And then the next sentence, desiring something moves it further from you. That's you're giving an example. Oh, there's an attractive girl. And then you say, okay, I'm going to give up on that idea. So if you resist, you make it stronger. And if you desire it, it goes further from you. So this, we really have to focus, to be conscious. There's the word that's in your title. Conscious of what we're really doing and what really happens. And then you say, and here, during the political campaigns, and I hear this word fighting, you have on the same page, the ego mind believes the way to win is by resisting and fighting for what is wanting. And I notice how many times politicians say, oh, I'll fight for you, I'll fight for you, I'll fight for you. And I thought, no, I don't want you to fight for me. Please don't fight. Because I kept hearing this word and thinking, no.
How often does the war on drugs or the war on cancer really do anything? Honestly, it's by vilifying something. So it's basically about finding the truth. Because peace comes from truth. Wars are caused by the absence of truth.
And you mentioned that Gandhi's quote, to be the change you want in the world. And there's, you say in your book, you must change yourself to change them. You must change your consciousness to change the world. And it all begins and ends with love.
Absolutely.
Gosh. I don't think people would think that, Kelly, that you must change your consciousness to change the world. And yeah, and most of us say, yeah, we've heard Gandhi's quote. And it all begins and ends with love. It all comes full circle, and that is the paradox. So can you explain that paradox?
Well, basically, let me just backtrack a little bit in that my research has shown that if a person, what I want to manifest is have people have miracles happen in their lives. And what is a miracle? A miracle is something that one can experience. It is something that one can observe, but is not provable. Those aspects, including love, are very powerful. Nobody can understand how it works. But it's interesting that in an endeavor or to try to get to a point of unconditional love, that is when miracles happen to you.
Another paradox you mentioned is the paradox of becoming a powerful healer is to become the patient.
That's correct.
So did you do that?
I did that. Basically, going back to the metaphor of the car, if a person comes in and I'm in my car, my body, my mind, and they're in their body and their mind, and my windshield is dirty, their windshield's dirty, there's no way I can see into their soul, into who they really are, what's the actual cause of their illness. It's only by using my windshield wipers and cleaning off my own windshield am I able to see who's driving that car or what's driving that car.
Well, you have a graphic for us that that if it's transparent, like you're talking about this windshield, what you see in yourself and others see in you. So that's the way we think we operate all the time, what we see in ourselves and what we see in others. That's if this window is transparent, but it's not always transparent.
That's right.
And you have another a little square in your graphic, what you don't see in yourself but others see in you, or what you see in yourself but others don't see in you. So this is somewhat, this is opaque, you say in your book. And then there's also this square of the unknown, what you don't see in yourself and others don't see in you. And then, well, what value is that?
Well, that's correct. Basically, what we don't see in ourselves and others see in us, that's due to denial. And basically, the other aspects of what you do see in yourself, you won't others see in you, is based on guilt and shame. And I like what Deepak Chopra once said. He said, characteristics that you see in other people that you dislike are actually characteristics that you have in yourself that you refuse to acknowledge. He also said, characteristics that you admire in other people are characteristics that you wish you had for yourself. But I have a different perspective on that. I think that is the characteristics that you admire in other people is in that totally opaque black pane of glass.
Yeah, I might mention that this graphic is four panes of glass, one very
Joe
clear
Harry
and
window.
One dark.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's correct.
But you know what, Kelly, one day I saw this woman in tears and I asked her what was the matter. And she said, my husband just called me fat, said I gained weight. And I was shocked because you knew who had really gained weight. She hadn't gained a pound. Her husband had gained weight.
Right.
And I thought, boy, is that an example. What he was disliking in himself, he was projecting onto his poor wife.
That's a lot of that happens in the world.
And so what bothers us most in somebody else, I sometimes notice that not so much now, not as many people smoke now, but some of the most militant anti-smokers were former smokers themselves. And I've witnessed that myself. You say in your book that in paradox, failures are more important than wins in developing inner strength and fortitude. So there's a paradox.
Right. And if you think about part of proceeding in this journey is about courage, willingness to look into oneself, looking at one's fears. How does one have courage unless one overcomes fear? So the paradox is they're interconnected. You can't, if I do something, but I've never had fear doing it, that's not courage. It's only when we have the fear and we're walking through the fear do we develop courage.
Well, speaking of courage, this comes up often, and I don't always say anything, but for example, I'll hear somebody say, oh, well, I really don't want to go to whatever this is, so I'll just say, and it's a white lie, and they just dismiss it as a white lie. I don't go along with that at all. What I would hope for, and in myself, not just other people, that I would have the courage to tell this other person the truth, not to be hurtful, but to be helpful.
Right.
If I had anger and this person didn't want to go out to tea with me because I was such an angry person, I would appreciate their telling me, you know what? you really should take a look at your anger, or however they might present it. But if they would tell me the truth, not just say, no, I can't go out for tea for you because, and then make up some little white lie about it. But that takes courage.
It takes courage, absolutely.
And I so admire, when I see courage manifest in other people, I think, boy, that I would hope that in that situation, I would have the courage to do what that person did.
That's right.
And that comes up often in your book, courage.
Yes, because it takes a lot of courage to look at oneself and one being responsible for where one is in life, and ultimately we are. And so taking the responsibility to make the changes that we need to make in order to become different, to affect changes in the way we think or changes in our body, one has to let go of long-held belief patterns and thoughts.
And when a friend tells me something that I might not want to hear about myself, they're sometimes surprised that I appreciate that and I thank them for it because I feel they're a true friend.
Yes.
If they tell me something that I need to hear, that I appreciate it. And I appreciate their courage in telling me because Maybe they don't know how I might get angry. But I don't, because I think now there's a true friend who tells me something that they're honest about and truthful about. And I appreciate that. My guest is Dr. Kelly Otani, and he has written a book, The Paradox of Conscious Healing. And I've been asking him, what are some of these paradoxes that you point out in your book? For example, you mentioned the belief that something outside yourself can make you feel love or find happiness, that belief is erroneous.
That's correct. I mean, people identify love maybe with having a trophy wife or having a sports car or having a beautiful house or having a lot of money. But all those, there's always a sense of fear with anything outside of ourselves because we feel like we have to control that situation because those things can always be taken away from us.
On that same page, you say relationships are ultimately about personal growth. Our soulmate might be our worst enemy, put in our lives to teach us about ourselves, our blind spots, or our shortcomings. And when you say this, relationships are ultimately about personal growth, that's what I feel. A true friend is the one who tells me something that helps me grow as a person.
Absolutely.
And that you mentioned this about relationships, and you say if you get upset in the relationship, there's something you need to discover about yourself, something keeping you from your higher self that needs to be let go.
Yes.
When you say things like higher self, do you get an eye roll from your colleagues, or do they even hear you talking about your higher self, Kelly?
Some do and some don't. Some people don't understand it, and some people are fearful of thinking about that.
Well, I try to imagine that when you went on a vision quest,
yes,
that must have, oh, Kelly, what are you doing? What is a vision quest, by the way?
A vision quest is basically going out by oneself and exploring oneself in that journey. So after I left my practice 10 years ago, I spent some time with a Yaqui shaman for about a week, and then I went out to the desert, and I didn't eat for 3 days, walked the desert. I opened up my closet doors, let my skeletons out.
Metaphorically speaking.
Metaphorically, mm-hmm. All my demons out, all the things that I was angry about in life, all the things that I was ashamed of, all the things I felt guilty for. We all have those things. And it was transformative. It was a very humbling experience. Confronting those, taking responsibility for those things, that it took me a while to come back after that experience. I didn't have enough energy. I laid on the floor of my house, didn't have enough energy to go get food. I was in chronic pain, the emotional pain. You know, when I left my practice, men tend to identify themselves with their career. And when I just decided, without being forced out, I just said, I can't do this anymore. I'm walking away. I lost my whole identity. And that's what causes a lot of people to have disease too, whether loss of identity as a wife, whether loss of identity as in your professional career or as a son. It affects our health when we lose that part of ourselves, that we have to evolve from that.
Well, I thought it was interesting that in your, besides this little, this vision quest, this actual trip you made out into the desert, you were also on a quest to find, to seek out people who could help enlighten you, if I want to use that word. And you were interested in a medical intuitive who's rather famous. She's written books, Carolyn Mace. And you said, okay, I'm going to get a few minutes with her. This was a conference. I'm going to get only a few minutes. I'm going to have my question ready. So you picked out, okay, what question do I want to ask her? So you picked out this question, and you walk up to Carolyn Mace, and you say, but when you open your mouth, that question is not the one that came out.
That's correct. There was a fear involved. Yeah, so I flew to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, because I heard she was giving a lecture on self-esteem. And so I really wanted to meet her, and I pondered for a couple weeks on what question would I ask her. And on the flight over there to Jackson Hole, it was ended up being, what is God's purpose for me during this lifetime? What am I supposed to be doing? And so when I went...
So I'm going to repeat that. Here's the question you have in your mind. You're going to ask Carolyn Mason, what is God's purpose for me in this life?
That's correct.
So you're all set to ask this question.
Yes. And so I walked... They had a reception for her before her lecture. And I went with food and drink, and I went walking in the room, and there was a cluster of people all around her. And finally, I got the courage to walk up to her. And as I walked up to her, everybody left at the same time.
So there she was, available for you to
correct.
Ask your question.
It's bizarre, but yeah, that's what happened. And so I went up to her, and I says, Miss Mays? And she goes, call me Carolyn. And I says, well, Carolyn, I just want to say I've studied your work. I want to thank you. It's changed my life. But I just have one question. And then I chickened out. I said, do you have problems with people mistaking ego-based self-esteem versus feeling secure? And she goes, oh, all the time. So she goes talking for
so here's
a few
this
minutes.
Nice academic question you have for her, this well-thought-out, intelligent person right. asking an intelligent question. And then how did she respond?
And she was talking on and on about self-esteem. And suddenly she stops. And she says, oh, and by the way, I don't know what God's purpose is for you.
I bet your jaw hit the floor.
Oh, I was stunned. Because how could she have known what your true question was? But she said your heart,
unspoken
that's
question
correct.
You
I didn't even, yeah, exactly.
You had not said a word about your real question you want.
So she said your heart is up here, but your mind is down here.
Okay, now for listeners who can't see your hands,
up here
your heart
above,
is up here above your head.
Yes. Over my head, and your mind is down around your waist. And what she said is, you have to release all your attachments, your old belief patterns, to get your mind where your heart is.
My guest is Dr. Kelly Otani, and he went on a quest. He walked away from his medical practice to search and research true healing. And he calls his book, Paradox of Conscious Healing. And you mentioned we've talked about truth as being important in healing, and humor.
Humor, absolutely.
So do you think you let yourself enjoy humor more now than maybe before you went on this quest?
That's something I'm really working on right now. I've always been somewhat serious, and now I'm trying to find humor in things, and I think I'm getting there. One of my experiences, I was... went to Second City Comedy Club down in Hollywood because I wanted to, I always heard humor or laughter is the best medicine. And I wanted to find out the truth behind that because I've heard various stories. And so I took a week-long class on stand-up comedy and the graduation at the end was...
I'm just trying to imagine you as a stand-up comic, Dr. Otani.
was you have to get up in a nightclub and do your act. And I tell you, of all the tests, exams I've done in my life, that was the hardest thing I've ever had to do. And I tell
all those
you,
medical exams, I'll hold a torch to standing
nothing.
Up.
Nothing. And so it was, I have to say, I sucked. I mean, I was terrible. And You know how they had those old Warner Brothers cartoons where somebody would do a performance on stage and all you hear at the end, we wouldn't hear clapping, you'd hear, just hear crickets in the background. Well, I tell you, I didn't even have crickets, basically, because all the crickets had left the performance and they were at the front window trying to get their money back. So let's just say I'm a comedic work in progress.
Well, then you will appreciate my next guest because he is a humorist.
Oh, great.
His writing, he doesn't do stand-up as far as I know, but he writes humorous stories. And he writes the column, and he's written columns in the newspapers, and he looks at his domestic situation with his wife and daughters and finds the humor in family life.
That's great.
So I know you will admire the fact that he's able to do that.
I can't wait.
Well, it's been such a pleasure talking to you about your book, Paradox of Conscious Healing, by Dr. Kelly Otani. Thank you so much, Dr. Otani.
Thank you, Nancy.
Author Eric Miller, a.k.a. Etc. Guy, says he is a dreadful handyman, a terrible mechanic, and is a has-been athlete with tired lungs and weak knees. He shares tales about a married dad navigating through life. He tries not always successfully to stay out of trouble with his wife and daughters, but lives on to tell the story. And I've invited Eric in today to tell us a Valentine's story. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And as I read this, I'll have to really think what I'm actually reading, because every year I revisit the same phenomenon. What do you do for Valentine's Day? So
you better get it right.
That's the annual thing. I should get it right, but I never do. That's the only consistency. And I bet there's probably half the guys listening to this are in the same boat.
Well, tell us your story.
Okay. This one is called Guy Needs Help with Valentine's Day. It's been featured in a couple of magazines and newspapers, but it's one of my favorites. National Compliment Day, January 24th, is the day you compliment others or pat yourself on the back. This begs a question. What day is opposite of National Compliment Day? You know, the day when one receives a swift kick to the rear end. For guys, that day is probably February 15th. We've hardly passed Christmas, and now guys need to be creative again, but this time for Valentine's Day. I enjoy shopping for sporting goods or tools, but for anything else, yuck. I'm married, almost 23 years, with two daughters. One would think I'd have Valentine's Day pegged. Our home is full of estrogen. Even the mutts are females. We have a tomcat, but he's neutered, and a male parakeet who lives in a cage. Sometimes their eyes catch mine, and the communication barrier transcends species. They stare at me as if to say, "Watch out, pal, stay out of trouble. Look what happened to us." We still have unopened boxes of chocolate from Christmas. I could re-gift them, but I foresee a fatal flaw. It's unsportsmanlike, unimaginative, and cheap. The kids are into sports, so they're a breeze to shop for. I stay away from clothes, though. How many guys know the difference between a blouse, a top, or t-shirt? Comrades, here's a lesson. A blouse has buttons. A top has no buttons, but can also be referred to as a t-shirt. A t-shirt is just that, but also serves to cover the body's top. My oldest daughter, Kate, explained, "Think of geometric shapes. All squares are rectangles, but not all rectangles are squares. Understand?" Yep, clear as mud. Kate gets a t-shirt. But my wife, she's in a different category. I'm fairly creative and thought I had a great gift one Easter. I bought a basket, plastic green grass, jelly beans, and theme-oriented trinkets. One that caught my eye was a gigantic egg. It was actually a container for Legs pantyhose. I remembered seeing TV ads and thought it was clever to get her a huge Easter egg. And the big surprise inside was pantyhose. I admired my originality. Self-admiration, I learned later, can be dangerous. She graciously accepted the Easter basket and life was good. until about the 4th of July. I bumbled into trouble and she asked, "What on earth were you thinking giving me a legs egg for Easter? For one, I hate black pantyhose, and two, didn't you check the size? What kind of idiot are you?" My jaw bounced off the floor as I processed her query, shocked at her question. First, the incident occurred 3 months prior and my brain had since disengaged. Second, she implied I was an idiot. Okay, maybe I was. As for the category of idiot, I had no idea. What an unfair question. For past Valentines, I've shopped for candy, flowers, and organized dinner reservations. Zero to hero flower shopping excursions to the gas station didn't go over well. I had better luck buying grocery store flowers, earning credit for actually parking and getting out of the car. Maybe this Valentine's I'll get her a tractor. My wife, you see, she works with contractors and she's familiar with heavy equipment. She'll cajole with the best of them. "Hey, that tractor over there has a mower, right? The John Deere I saw doesn't. Plus, it's missing a scraper. I need a 5-foot box." We recently test drove several tractors. It was a blast, but I just can't see draining our savings account to buy a John Deere. But then again, I don't want a Dear John letter either. Maybe I should just rent one. We can joyride around town, which is much more fun than buying jewelry. Men, we're on AM, and our women listen to FM. The radio plays, but the reception isn't clear. Guys, what are you doing for Valentine's Day? This is a plea for help. Let me know what worked for you. Ladies, this is your opportunity to provide a much-needed community service. I'd appreciate your advice. We only have a few shopping days left. A prize will be awarded for the best idea. The winner gets a box of chocolate.
This is humorist Eric Miller, also known as Etc. Guy, and he has just read us a story, "Guy Needs Help with Valentine's Day."
That's right. So we're going into Valentine's 2017, and I'm just going at it the same way as I did in 1994, 95, 96, all the way through 2016. So it's a new canvas, white canvas.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank my first guest, Dr. Kelly Otani, author of Paradox of Conscious Healing. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org. I'm Nancy Wigman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.